pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mayor Hall.
Here.
Vice Mayor Nobile.
Present.
Councilmember Cuff.
Present.
Councilmember Clufus.
Present.
Councilmember Shipley.
Here.
Mayor, all members are present.
I almost started a trend.
You did. I followed suit.
Agenda item number one are the minutes of the City Council. Like to entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. This morning, we have a presentation, an update on our law enforcement within the city of Palm Coast. Today, we have Sheriff Jim Manfrey, who will present. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor. All members
morning.
Of the City Council.
Good morning.
I'd like to publicly congratulate Councilman Clufus and Councilman Cuff for your nominations. As you'll find, public service is a tough thing, but it's so rewarding. And I'd like to acknowledge Mr. Land and Mr. Reichman as well. This is my opportunity, I've asked, just to thank the City Council of the past 4 years for their incredible investment and support of law enforcement. It really has truly been very magnanimous and generous. And I just want to go through some of the things that we've accomplished over these 4 years. And the first was our Palm Coast precinct. When I walked in the door, our precinct was tucked away over on Old Kings Road. It was small and inefficient, and we really didn't provide good service to the public, good customer service. And with the help of the city manager, we were able to build out almost three times the space as we had in the old facility. It was right next to where at that time the city's offices were, so it fostered communication. But that particular location where it is today has resulted in almost a 4 to 5 time increase in customers coming in, citizens coming in to get service by law enforcement. And it's established a presence in an area that is more central to our population. And let me tell you exactly what it is the city accomplished. We had about 3,000 square feet of office space. And by the way, we paid less for that 3,000 square feet than we paid for the 1,100 square feet that we were in previously. So yes, government can save money. But what we also did is that the city helped us design the precinct with the help of Commander Carmen. I give him a lot of credit. He worked very closely with city employees. And the city built it out for cost. Actually, the landlord contributed about half the money to tenant improvements, and we were able to build it out for almost $10,000. If we had gone out into the marketplace, that would have cost us probably $50,000 to $60,000. And I think what it does is represents not only a good face to law enforcement, but the city as well, because that's what we're there to do, is serve the city through our contractual relationship. So that has been a huge combined effort that I really think has provided huge results. Secondly, there is a technology fund that the city had, and it was a pool of money that had been accumulating over the years. It came from a $2 fee on all the tickets that we wrote in the city went to this technology fund, and the city manager and I had some discussions about how to properly utilize that. And the first thing that came about was what we realized is that our deputies were not fully prepared to deal with cardiac events in our community. We have an older community. A lot of times the deputies are the first on scene because they are out patrolling before our ambulance service or first responders get there. So we talked to the city about purchasing AEDs. It took me 4 years, but I actually now know what AEDs stand for. It's automatic external defibrillators. And what AEDs are, they're a very quick way to bring cardiac help to victims. And it has resulted just recently in saving a life here in Palm Coast. We just gave an award to Corporal Ryan Emery for using a defibrillator and saving someone's life. So that was about, I think it was about almost $60,000 cost for all those AEDs, but now each one of our road deputies in the city of Palm Coast now have an AED. The second issue that came about was the issue of body cameras. And I'm very proud that we have been way ahead of the curve on body cameras. I think there's only 3 sheriff's offices in the state of Florida fully implementing body cameras, and we've had that full implementation in the city for almost 3 years now. But it's a huge upfront cost. It was almost $120,000 to purchase body cameras for all our road patrol deputies. And again, we went back to the city manager and asked if we could tap that technology fund, and again, he willingly did that. And we were, and through the approval of the city council, all of our deputies have body cameras. And let me just tell you how significant it has been. Wherever body cameras have been implemented, and it's certainly clear in this county, use of force incidents almost disappear. Complaints from the public disappear. We've had no use of force complaints and no sustained complaints from the public in the 3 years that we've implemented body cameras. And why is that? Well, it changes dynamic. We're all on TV right now. We act differently when we're on TV or we're being photographed. Well, that same encounter that sometime led to an angry exchange which would lead to use of force, now is different. People act differently. The public, when they know they're on camera, don't say the things they do, don't act out as much as they did before. And honestly, law enforcement acts differently too. And what has happened is that in the few instances where we've gotten complaints, just showing the video to the complainant, I mean, sometimes they literally do not know how they were acting towards law enforcement and how law enforcement is acting towards them because they're so upset at the time, and the complaints go away. So that was a huge advantage that we've had in law enforcement by having those. Also, ticket writers. The last thing we tapped the technology fund was for ticket writers. Now, for anybody who's ever been in law enforcement and has gotten a ticket, trying to decipher what a ticket actually tells you is kind of tough. Deputies are out there sometimes, tired, and their handwriting is not always the best. So what we, through ticket writers, it's an electronic version of a ticket, which now all of our road deputies have in the city of Palm Coast. Rather than having to write it out, they punch it in through their software, an electronic ticket gets generated and immediately gets sent to the clerk's office and to our records department. So it's a much more efficient way of doing business. We also were involved in the first active shooter scenario, real-life active shooter scenario, through Kevin Guthrie, and who was at the time the head of the emergency manager for the county of Flagler. But the city participated in that event. It was an active shooter event at Flagler Palm Coast High School. It was full on. We had everyone involved, all first responders, the school district, the city. And it gave us an opportunity to see what we needed to do better. And I know recently we've just had some active shooter training that Commander Carmen and Sergeant Lutz also trained city staff in. So that idea of training has been really significant, and I think that has been a huge success. And I think finally what I would like to thank, and I know he is, he's very humble about receiving praise, but the city manager and I have had just a terrific relationship, at least from my perspective. I hope he believes that too. We have met on a monthly basis, really from before I started as sheriff. And I could not have done my job, to be honest, without his guidance and therapy sessions over the past 48 months. We would spend anywhere from an hour to 2 hours and get all of our administrators and our staff mad at us because we were always over just talking about issues and walking through the things that frustrated us about law enforcement and our first responders. But we've come up with so many good ideas and so many efforts. And the last that I hope that this council continues to strive towards, that has been one of the major conversations that the city manager and I have had, is about our radio system. It is already failing. During the hurricane, it was kept together by paper clips and rubber bands. It was, if I related the stories to you, you wouldn't believe it. Just acts of heroism that were occurred by law enforcement to keep that system going. We don't have sufficient radio tower coverage. The present software is obsolete. The new system, the P25 system, not only is an upgrade to the software, it'll be quicker, but it also allow for interoperability for other state agencies. And we need to get there as quickly as possible. We've had meeting after meeting about this. I know, Mayor, that this is one of your tasks to get this done with the county. I understand they're finally talking about hiring a consultant. After 4 years, we've gotten at least that far. But this isn't something that we can wait on. The system is 10 years old. I understand that they finance it over 15 years. They're looking to implement it in 2021. We just can't get there. Someone is going to get injured if we wait that long. It needs to be done as soon as we can. I understand the fiscal implications, but you're talking about first responders who are putting their lives on the line, and the public as well, who are really dependent on proper communication to make sure that their lives are saved, or first responders get there as quickly as they can, or they get there to the right location. And I mean, there was no greater example of this than during a hurricane. We had all of these state agencies that were here, tremendous effort, and probably had almost 120 state law enforcement partners here. And we couldn't communicate with them. We literally had to talk to them over cell phones. So I know this is a priority to City Council. I encourage you to maintain that priority. I think, you know, this is something that has to happen sooner rather than later. And I would like to thank Commander Common personally as well for creating the great relationship that we've had with the city. Our community-oriented policing philosophy means that we treat everyone like they're our customer. And Commander Common is the best example I've ever met of that. I know he is well-known throughout this city hall as someone who is open and friendly. And isn't that the face of law enforcement that we want for our community? So I'd like to leave by thanking you once again for all of your support of law enforcement, and I know it will continue in the future. And again, Mr. Landon, thank you from my heart for all that you've done for me in law enforcement. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sheriff Manfrey, for your service to our community. You have certainly served us well and kept us safe. I wish you and Cornelia much success and happiness moving forward, whatever the future holds for both of you. Thank you. Thank you. We'll now move to agenda item number 3, which is
Yes, Madam Mayor, Council, this is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida. It provides for the amendment of the official zoning map as established in Section 2.06 of the City of Palm Coast Unified Land Development Code. This ordinance amends the official zoning map for 28.6 acres, more or less, of certain real property generally located on the east side of Laramie Drive, about 1/2 mile north of Matanzas Woods Parkway, and being more particularly described in the attachment Exhibit A and Exhibit B to this ordinance. Rezoning from PUD Plan Unit Development, that's pursuant to the 2005 Unified Land Development Code, to Master Plan Development District, or MPD, Zoning District. This ordinance provides for conflicts for severability and provides for an effective date. Council, this is second reading. It is a quasi-judicial hearing. If you have had any ex parte communications since the first reading, those should be disclosed, which would include any phone calls or emails, or if you've been stopped at Target during your holiday shopping or that sort of thing. Whatever the case may be, those should be disclosed.
Any member of the council have anything to disclose at this time? No? Landon, I'll turn it over to you.
Good morning, Mayor, City Council. This is a second reading. We had a very productive public hearing last business meeting. Nothing new to add other than the one change City Council requested, and that was make sure that there would be two exits if we ever had more than 50 homes in that area to meet our code. And that has been added. Other than that, no changes, and we believe it's ready for final adoption.
Any discussion by council before we open up to the public? Any member from the public wish to make comment on this issue? Please do so at this time. And we'll close public comment. We'll take it back to the council. I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Motion to approve rezoning acres for 2.828 acres from Matanzas Lake Unit developed to Matanzas Land Master Plan Development.
Okay, thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and seconded is called to order. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Thank you.
Mayor, thank you very much. Merry Christmas to everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
We'll now move to agenda item number four, an ordinance establishing a temporary moratorium of 270 days prohibiting medical cannabis marijuana activities within the City of Palm Coast. Mr. Landon.
Mr. Reichman,
I need to read the title. This is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, establishing a temporary moratorium within the jurisdictional limits of the City of Palm Coast. This ordinance adopts findings of fact and prohibits any and all medical cannabis activities during the moratorium period, including the growing, cultivation, processing, manufacture, dispensing, distribution, and sale of medical cannabis, low THC cannabis, derivative products, and related activities. This ordinance directs staff to develop proposed Unified Land Development Code provisions and other recommendations regarding such cannabis-related activities. Provides for administrative relief procedure and provides for penalties, severability, conflicts, and an effective date.
Mayor, City Council, this is a result of the constitutional amendment that was approved by the voters last month. Constitutional amendments are very general and by design, and the next step is really for the state legislature now to develop framework at a state level so we know exactly what is allowed, what's not allowed, and all the details associated with it at the state level. And then after that, it would be appropriate for local jurisdictions to adopt zoning ordinances or other things to implement the state framework. Obviously, it's impossible for us to do that until the state has done their job. So what this does, it doesn't address medical marijuana at a local level whatsoever. It is just basically saying that we will not accept any applications for some type of dispensary or other associated activities in Palm Coast until such time as the state has completed their task and we've completed ours. So this is strictly a moratorium to make sure that someone doesn't attempt to apply before the rules are set by the state. It doesn't establish any rules. It doesn't address it whatsoever. It is strictly puts us on hold, waiting for the next step.
Any council member comments or questions? I'll open up to the public for comment. Any member of the public wish to make comment on agenda item number four, please do so at this time. And I'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Motion approval.
Second.
Motion and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing
aye.
None.
No. I oppose.
Okay. Sorry about that. Yeah, can we do a roll call? Sorry.
Vice Mayor Nobile?
Yes.
Councilmember Cupp?
Yes.
Councilmember Clufus?
No.
Councilmember Shipley?
Yes.
Mayor Holland?
Yes.
Mayor, this motion passes 4-1.
Thank you. Now move to agenda item number 5 and ordinance. Or Mr. Reichman, do you read that ordinance as well?
Certainly, Mayor. This is an ordinance of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, annexing by voluntary petition properties located contiguous to the City of Palm Coast in accordance with the voluntary annexation provisions of Section 171.044 Florida statutes. This ordinance redefines the boundaries of the City of Palm Coast to include a portion of the property known as Edge Properties, LLC, located in Section 39, Township 12, Range 31. This ordinance redefines the corporate limits of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, and generally consisting of approximately 26.71 acres more or less, as particularly described in the ordinance. This ordinance provides for findings for the taking of administrative actions for severability, conflicts, non-codification, and an effective date.
Any member of the council have any questions or discussion? If not, I'll open up to the public for comment. Any member from the public wish to make public comment at this time, please do so. I'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council.
Questions?
Yes.
We are just talking about the shaded area being annexed right now, right?
That is correct.
Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Now move to resolutions portion of our agenda, a resolution approving a pre-annexation and economic development agreement with Edge Properties, LLC.
Mayor, this is the actually is associated with your last action. The pre-annexation agreement, it's a pretty boilerplate agreement. Nothing unusual in it, no provisions that we've outlined that's not standard. By the resolution, you will have adopted it first because it only has one reading. The ordinance doesn't go into effect until your next meeting when you have the second reading. So this outlines, in fact, the details of it.
Any council questions or comments? Open it up to the public for public comment. Any member of the public wish to make comment, please do so at the time. None, I'll close public comment, take it back to our council, entertain a motion to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number 7, resolution approving the CDBG program consolidated annual performance and evaluation report for the program period of October 1st, 2015 to September 30th, 2016.
Mayor, City Council, this item, actually the next two items are associated with our Community Development Block Grant Program. It's a federal program run through HUD. This requirement is that each year we are to report on how the dollars were spent during the past year. And so Jose, who takes the lead on this program for us, is going to give us a report on what did we do last year and how we spent the money. Jose, take it from here, please.
Sure. Good morning, Mayor, members of City Council. Jose Papa with the Community Development Department.
Morning.
As Mr. Landon stated, this is our annual performance report for CDBG. And just to give you a little background, excuse me, there are a number of different documents that are required as part of the CDBG program. As you'll see later, there's something called an analysis of impediments to fair housing, which basically evaluates housing conditions and looks at data and statistics that are related to housing within the city of Palm Coast. There's the Consolidated Action Plan, which is a 5-year comprehensive plan, really a 5-year strategy of what activities we might undertake using CDBG dollars. And finally, there's the Annual Action Plan, which is a short-term plan. It's a 1-year plan of activities that will be undertaken using CDBG dollars. And as required, the document that I'm about to present is the Consolidated Annual Performance and Evaluation Report. Basically, again, the annual performance report. So for this performance report, it covers the past fiscal year, which started October 1st, 2015, and ended on September 30, 2016. And again, the purpose to describe the activities, and it provides an update on the city's progress in implementing CDBG programs and other activities identified in the Consolidated and Annual Action Plan. Our CDBG dollars are mainly used for 3 activities. Infrastructure, at this time, we're using CDBG dollars to really complete the Seminole Woods Neighborhood Multi-Use Path. We have a housing rehab program where we provide financial assistance for owner-occupied homes to do repairs. And finally, public service, and this is where we provide for scholarships for low-moderate income students to attend our summer camp. And finally, part of the CDBG dollars is used for planning and administration. And really, a big part of it is used for the program delivery and the housing rehab. And that would pay for a consultant to go out and inspect the house and really write up a scope of work as to what work can be done on the house. In 2015, we had an allocation of $438,979. Just to bring us up to date, for infrastructure, we continue to complete in-house the design of the final 3.3 miles of the Seminole Woods neighborhood multi-use path. And this would be the section that's remaining on Sesame Boulevard. That's about 3.3 miles. And I say Sesame Boulevard, but that also includes a portion of really Citation Boulevard, connecting Sesame Citation back to Seminole Woods Boulevard. At the end of the fiscal year, there's about $281,000 available. And with the fiscal 2016 allocation, there's another $250,000 available. So there's like $530,000 available to complete the final 3.3 miles of this neighborhood multi-use path. For housing rehab, in 2015, we completed three, but there are still, right now, 10 homes under repair, and at the time that the fiscal year ended, there were two homes pending their bid, but that the bid process has been completed for those. So currently, we do have 12 homes under repair using CDBG dollars, and there's $322,000 available to complete those 12 homes.
Jose, let me ask a quick question. Are there any homes not in this process, but in who have applied?
We have, yes, they have applied, but due to the amount of funds we have available, they were not funded, and so they, if needed, they would have to apply the next year. We don't have a waiting list.
Are we anticipating any additional home applications due to Matthew?
I believe that they have other sources available for Matthew, but since this is really a first-in, first-out program, they're, of course, if they qualify through income, they're allowed to apply for the program.
And so this coming year, we're looking at spending half the CDBG, about half the CDBG money on that Seminole Trails?
That's correct, sir, yes. And that would finish up the...
Have we already approved that?
Yes.
I said yes to that? Okay.
Yes.
Now, Mr. Nobile, Councilman Nobile...
I'm sorry.
We do have the SHIP program that's run by the county, and they also have funds available for home repair. Emergency assistance is available through that.
Because I hate to see this money go... I said this before. I hate to see this money go to trails when we have homes that need... that need repair, and people, you know, it just doesn't make too much sense to me. Can we get any money from the TPO for the trail?
We did get a portion to fund the trail, yes, sir. We that leg from Sesame Boulevard to US-1 was funded through the TPO.
Are we going to be complete with the trail after this budget year?
Yes.
Yes.
So we're right. I heard it from Jose now.
Because I really don't, I don't anticipate myself on this next budget.
Yes, sir.
Offering up any more money.
Let's maybe back up because, if you don't mind, can we let Jose finish this and then we'll give you an update on the future.
Yes.
That would probably be helpful.
So, and just the remaining activity that we fund is a public service activity, and that's the summer camp stipend. Again, it allows low-moderate income students to attend our camps. This past year, we were able to assist 25 students, and we typically allocate 10 grand for that, but there were some leftover funds from the last allocation, and that was included in that allocation. So the next step from here, council adopts this at this meeting, then we will transmit or submit the report to HUD, and we're required to submit by December 29th.
There aren't any more questions from council. I'll give you a little update. As Jose's slide at the beginning, maybe if you go back to that, that would be helpful. There are a couple of planning documents that are required. One of them is a five-year plan, the Consolidated Action Plan, which is trying to kind of outline your plan for 5 years. And then you have to have the one-year action plan, which is basically what you budget for. Those were recently adopted. The five-year plan, we are in the fifth year. So, Mr. Nobile, when you talk about future, we've said all along that we've kind of completed that five-year plan or in the process this year. And then soon City Council will be asked to start looking at the next 5 years, and then that's where you start setting priorities as to whether there are other neighborhood projects or individual homes or other qualified projects that you would take a look at. Trails, as you know, we put our own dollars into that too, so it's kind of a matching, some CDBG, some of our own. We've been successful at the Transportation Planning Organization to have FDOT dollars come into our community for the trails also. So the TPO dollars, if you will. But the one in particular that Jose mentioned was part of this project, and that is finishing up Cinema Woods down to US 1. So that's a good thing, because then we don't have to use our local tax dollars. The next one that is on the TPO list that right now, if things go as planned, will be under construction towards the end of 2017, and that is Lakeview up in the L section. That is our next priority. And TPO dollars have been tentatively approved for that, meaning we still have to go through some of that process. So, yes, we are getting some FDOT dollars. We're using some local dollars and some CDBG dollars for our trails. Not every neighborhood qualifies for neighborhood-type programs, so there is some qualification requirements, and just as there is for housing.
That's based on income for the general, for the
yes,
area.
Sir.
What is that area?
It's a census tract.
Excuse me?
It's the census tract.
Oh, okay.
If the census tract qualifies as a low-moderate income census tract, then they would be eligible for area-wide projects such as the multi-use path.
It's not uncommon for utility-type improvements, street improvements.
I don't overly disagree with using the funds, but I rather, if we have homes and people who are having problems with their homes, I'd like to see that, you know, it seems to me like it's more important.
So we'll have that discussion, though. We'll be able to have that discussion, because this ends this last portion of the
5 years,
process.
Yes.
And
yes.
So we will...
That's a different item, different mm-hmm. time, but it will be coming up in 2017.
Is there any other discussions or questions on this particular item? If not, I'll open it up to the public for comment. Any member of the public wish to make comment on this item, please do so at this time. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. Motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number 8, resolution approving the analysis of impediments to fair housing. Mr. Levin.
Mayor, City Council, this is a second presentation on CDBG program. As you saw on that one slide, there are four things we have to do, and this is another one. It's a little analysis. We've actually contracted with the Northeast Florida Regional Council. And so I'm going to turn it over to Jose to introduce our special guest, and then she's going to make the presentation.
Good morning again. We have with us today Ms. Margot Mooring, who is the planning director for the... Is that your title?
I'm policy.
Policy director for the Northeast Florida Regional Council. I believe as a brief background, the Northeast Florida Regional Council is a regional entity that serves local governments. They do various items such as planning studies, assist local governments. Even the smaller local governments, they tend to serve as the planning staff at least comprehensive planning staff for some of the smaller governments in the 7-county region of the Northeast Florida Regional Council. And just as a background, I believe we've already gone through some of these required documents. And so the document before we have before you today is the analysis of impediments to fair housing. And this document really sets up some of the other documents that we will complete in the upcoming year. That would be like the 5-year strategic action plan and the annual action plan. Information, the data and statistics that we gather from through this study will be incorporated and feed into some of the recommendations that we will have for you when we look at the consolidated action plan and annual action plan. So from here, I'll let Ms. Mooring take over.
Thank you, Jose. Good morning, Madam Mayor, members of the council.
Morning.
I'm going to begin with what is fair housing, because that's probably where it all starts. This is actually a quote that we had at every table at our public open house meeting, because it's not necessarily intuitive, the many aspects of fair housing. So please bear with me. I'm going to read it with some emphasis. Fair housing choice involves individuals and families having the information, opportunity, and options to live where they choose without unlawful discrimination and other barriers related to race, color, religion, sex, familial status, national origin, or disability, and that their choices realistically include options in integrated areas with access to opportunity. So it's a bigger definition than just housing. That's how the government defines fair housing. So there were two ways that we came up with a first draft of the analysis of impediments to fair housing. The first was HUD has a methodology for a fair housing assessment, and starting next year, fair housing assessments are going to be this requirement that Jose described. So it's a set methodology that results in a series of maps and a series of kind of data points and tables. So that was the data, if you will. We then took that to a stakeholders meeting and a public open house and said, what does it mean? Because locally, that is really where you need to sort of interpret, you know, the data doesn't tell the story. The community needs to kind of look at it and tell us, you know, what the data says to them. And also, there's nuances there. Some of the data needed to be refined. The study reflects what we heard, which wasn't always exactly what the data would show if you hadn't had that conversation. So the findings of that first draft were overwhelmingly growth. And certainly that's something that Palm Coast knows has been kind of a feature of Palm Coast. It's hard to kind of ignore it. It's a good thing, but certainly it's a factor. Palm Coast has a higher percentage of home ownership than the rest of the state. The statewide average is about 68%. Palm Coast is more like 76%. Again, it's a good thing, but it's an observation that one would have to mean, or it's a thing. I won't even characterize it. Palm Coast also has new housing.
Sorry, Mark. A question. When we say high percentage of home ownership, every home is owned. What do you mean by that?
I owner occupied.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
And the other factor is new housing stock. And this distinguishes Palm Coast because 50% of the housing units in Palm Coast have been constructed since 2000. So that says something about the condition that they're in. So that, you know, you kind of can't ignore that observation either. We also found challenges for households without cars. It's difficult to get around if you don't have a car in Palm Coast. And we heard that anecdotally, and the data told us that. The data told us that there were some housing problems disproportionately impacting some ethnic groups. It doesn't relate to geography, but it does say that if you're African American or Hispanic, you're more likely to have housing problems as HUD defines them. Now, HUD defines them as more than one person per room in a unit, or incomplete bathroom or incomplete kitchen, or spending more than 30% under one definition or 50% of your income on housing. So those are the housing problems that HUD asked us to look at. And if you look at that in Palm Coast, you do find some ethnic groups are affected more frequently. So that's something to address.
So the ethnicity is tied to their financial status also? Well, because you said their income.
We didn't make a similar finding specific to the to their income level.
Okay.
So. And again, it didn't relate to where they lived. We didn't find pockets. We simply found if you look only at ethnicity,
okay,
there's a difference in impact.
I had one question too. After we had gone through this the first time, the 50% mark where you spend 50% of your income on housing, does someone qualify into that group, whether or not I make $1,000 a month and I pay $500 towards a house, or I make $20,000 and I'm paying $10,000 on my mortgage? Is there a differentiation there, or do they both fall underneath into the same umbrella?
It's mainly a monthly calculation.
Okay.
So you could be making a lot of money and just choose to spend a lot of money on housing, and you're considered a problem. But it's not. It's for those who are making smaller amounts of money. That's your point, right,
Ms.
Clark? Yeah, see, so you're making smaller amounts of money. That's a problem because you can't find a house for $500 to rent, but you surely can find one for $10,000, you know.
Got it. Okay.
And the other thing that we observed was a lack of diversity in housing choice. And this is both from the data and anecdotally, folks told us that they were observing that. So the first draft was taken to the Citizens Advisory Task Force on November 2nd. And HUD describes it as local knowledge. When you add this, you know, the kind of intelligence that comes from the community is a defined term, and it's called local knowledge.
Let me just interrupt you just for a second, because I think this is important since, we had this discussion in our workshop, and we really vetted this issue, but I do think it's important to clarify that Palm Coast is unique than many other communities because we have that high percentage of high ownership, which is very rare when you look at other communities percentage-wise. We're a newer community, if you will, with newer homes rather than looking at different sections of our community. So when you do that analysis, or HUD does that analysis or has those criteria, the findings that you then draw out of that, and when you make recommendations as to address some of the issues of the findings, it's not one size fits all for housing. So do you take that into consideration when you're looking at this? I just say that because having served on the regional council for over 6 years, Flagler County is different onto six other counties. We are the main population base. We have very different history, if you will, as far as ITT developing a certain kind of master plan development.
May I inject in there? So we also have to look at the evolution of Palm Coast, where the plan it was originally to bring in retirement people. So the retirees would move down here. That's a whole different base of residents. We are now in the process of evolving into younger families. So that's where the numbers get skewed because we're still over 50% of that retirement initial move that came down, and now we're transitioning over. So it's hard when you mix those numbers because you have a very stable and very diverse group of retirees who moved down from the north, now mixing in with younger people. So we don't have an established community as far as a multi-generational. And the multi-generational is when we start hitting a lot of these issues where you have families who are having problems finding homes and or finding affordable homes and that kind of stuff. And it will start at some point changing when some of them more, you know, when a lot of them are renting more so than living there. So
yeah, I just think it's an important distinction. So when we're speaking at about this publicly. I mean, I can tell you, having analyzed serving on committees, serving on boards, looking at transportation issues and everything else, we are a very unique, distinct community, particularly in Northeast Florida, that have different challenges unto itself. So I just think we need to continue to recognize that, that we're not going to be able to solve every single issue in the same way that other communities are addressing these issues, but rather look at them a little bit comprehensively, but also long-term and slowly. So, yeah.
Keep going.
Absolutely, I agree. And I think that is, you're kind of defining the importance of local knowledge. The methodology may be the same for every single community. But until you apply that local knowledge, that's when you know what it means and what you need to work on. So the Citizens Advisory Task Force was very helpful. They added that to just kind of bear in mind that education on fair housing is going to take time. It's not kind of something that will happen instantly. They kind of refined the observation that there was a need for senior units to say it's not necessarily assisted living units, but perhaps age-restricted units, so units that have some amenities that are associated with senior living, but not necessarily assisted living, because those are being created. They mentioned that that there's a minimum house standard that may be precluding starter homes. So that's at least something to think about if there is, in fact, a need for starter homes. And I'll get to that in our recommendations.
And we breezed over this in our workshop, but I would like to check with staff. As far as I know, our land development code does not require a three-bedroom home as the minimum home in Palm Coast, do they?
Right, no.
It's just square footage, right? It's just square footage, yes.
With covenants that provide for minimum
minimum square footage.
And our minimum square...
This before, and I've heard realtors and builders say people won't buy two-bedroom homes.
Right, yes.
But I've never seen anything in our years on the planning board or working in land development
that
mandates this. I think it's an urban myth that some
people
are looking for housing in... suburban myth is the
case. The urban myth is generated by the consumer who, when they go look at a home on a quarter-acre lot, these are the kind of standards they look for. I agree. We do have a minimum square footage, but it's relatively small. Jose, do you remember what? 1,200 square feet. So that is not a big home, but that's what our code is. So now whether you can get three bedrooms and two baths in a 1,200 square foot home, you probably can.
I've seen four bedrooms in that.
Yep.
In a what do you call those? Houses we build.
Whatever. I saw this in the presentation last week and meant to check with staff about it. But thought that was important to confirm.
So the Citizens Advisory Task Force also mentioned that there were access challenges if you live outside Palm Coast and wanted to. For example, come in and work in Palm Coast. And they mentioned walkability, that walkability might be a metric to consider going forward. So that was the input into the draft you see before you. And the overall objective, based on all of that input, is simply about increasing choices. So the areas that affects are mobility, addressing existing housing with problems, and you've been doing that, and you just talked about how you're doing that, and exploring widening the range of housing types, maybe something that you want to do. So how do we recommend that you do it? One goal would be a community consensus on housing choice, so having that community discussion and deciding, is there a need for different types of units at different price points? We heard anecdotally that there was. But that's not the same as having a community conversation and deciding as a community that you agree that there's a need for it. So starter homes came up, senior living came up, and apartments. We did have a lady say she'd been looking for 5 months unsuccessfully for the type of unit that she was in searching for. So there's plenty of ways to do that. You could do a survey. You could engage stakeholders. You could have community meetings. You could, you know, but having that conversation as a community would identify if there's a need for additional choice and for what.
What we're talking here about as a city is not starter home senior living apartments, but making enabling that. Because we're not putting up this stuff.
No.
So if somebody doesn't build it, then we, you know, it's like, okay, I don't know where are we being seen as being overly regulating for these areas?
No,
trying to understand is what's our role here.
This is not attempting to talk about the regulations. This is attempting to take a look at a snapshot of what Palm Coast looks like today.
Okay.
And then say, okay, in the future, if we want to go the same direction or a little different direction, and what we're hearing here is as we all know, that we've got an abundance of quarter-acre lots, single-family lots. But a good example is action you just took tonight.
The L section.
In the L section. That was still a single-family home, but, you know, it doesn't have as large of a lot and as much upkeep. You know, we have others, Hidden Lakes and a variety of others in town that are happening. So that's a good example of things changing. On the other hand, you know, that was multifamily. And if you try to put apartments in people's backyards or right in the middle of the neighborhood, so you have to have the right location, and that's what you would do. But the apartments there behind the Target Center, so that, and those are senior, and continuing that, so those people can walk to get something to eat, buy groceries, shopping, jobs, et cetera. You know, in other words, right location, good mix, this whole downtown area that we're in right now of having a good mixture there. So recognizing that a mixture is good and then trying to figure out the right place for that mixture, I think, is what's will happen in the future. This is just trying to acknowledge the fact that what are you going to look like in the future? And I think it's correct that if you're, you know, in the service industry and not making a lot of money, you can't afford a 3,000 square foot house. But you still need to live in Palm Coast, and so it's trying to make sure that we accommodate all those.
It's fun.
So if the community discussion results in a goal that there should be greater variety of housing choice, the first thing we're recommending is that you share the results of the community outreach with the market, because that's who would be providing that type of unit. And if they know that there's a need for it, that obviously is good information for them. We thought about partnering with banks. Banks, through the Community Reinvestment Act, are required to provide services to low-income people. They might be interested in financing, in kind of the gap financing that might be necessary in order to get some types of units.
Fair housing, again, this is an affordable housing, correct? We're talking about two different things. I asked you to clarify that last time in the workshop. I mean, affordable housing is much different, or workforce housing, or whatever you want to refer to it, but we're talking about fair housing, correct?
Right, but it's within the definition that you have access to opportunity. So that includes the ability to find housing that you can afford. So it's an aspect. Fair housing is far bigger than just affordable housing. And we also suggested that as part of the community conversation, ask that question. Should it be about price point? Is that an issue? The HUD isn't telling you that it is, but we're just saying it's part of the conversation. Is that, and anecdotally it did come up, price points did come up. So I don't know what the community consensus would be, but it's worth at least discussing.
But it's more than affordable, this type of housing.
Yeah.
Not everybody wants to take care of a yard. You could have buy a condo that's a $1 million condo. It's not affordable in the definition of affordable housing, but it's a different choice. So trying to make sure there's a variety of choices, I think, is what this is more, including price, but also the type of housing. You know, there's nothing worse than having a neighbor that doesn't want to take care of their yard but feel like that's the only choice they have, and then code enforcement gets involved. So give them something that they like and have more options, but they can still live in Palm Coast. I think that's really what the message here is.
So renovating existing housing, this is something that you're already doing, and that addresses folks who have housing problems. So that is great for choice. And then what you do here is count units, and it came up in the workshop, the importance of metrics. So count the different types of units with the city's goals in mind, and that would be how you measure success. And then finally, there's that issue of access to opportunity, and that has to do with mobility. So you guys have made huge progress in having the Flagler County Transit Development Plan be completed and underway. Implementation is underway. That's huge because it takes years to get through the planning process for things related to transit, and that is underway. And Palm Coast's use of transit and Palm Coast's needs for transit was taken into account when that plan was done. So that means you're kind of you're on the road, if you will, to transit in a more robust way. It will take a while to get there. And that defines transit in the very inclusive way. So it's transit, so it's a real choice. It's not just getting to work, or it's not just getting to dialysis because you're transportation disadvantaged. It's that it is a real mobility option, just like cycling or walking, all those things. So it's in both increasing the acceptance of and usage of transit, because it's one of those things that are very related. If you can't get more transit unless people use it. So that's important. And then tracking ridership is something that is already being done and something that you can keep an eye on. So those are the goals that this analysis is suggesting that you consider for your planning going forward. So what happens next, we did post the draft and got no comments during the November 7th to December 6th period. Today is your day. We hope for action. Next step is submittal to US HUD after we kind of tweak the plan to reflect the results of these last two meetings. And I'm available for questions. Thank you for your time.
Oh, I mean, this submittal to US HUD, that doesn't require us to create a plan or anything further. It's just a submittal of...
Let me clarify. There's nothing in here that binds city council. This is an awareness document. This is a let's take a look at ourselves kind of process. Get input from the community, your advisory committee. Then the idea is you take this kind of analysis, and then when you do your five-year strategic plan for CDB dollars, you take this in consideration. It's that five-year action plan and one-year action plan that really is the implementation document. This is more just a take a look. So there's nothing in here that requires you to do anything. There is this requirement to complete this, adopt it, so that they know you've at least taken a look at your community.
I totally agree that there's... It's a little confusing when we say fair housing and affordable housing, because the Fair Housing Act and then the Affordable Housing Act. This doesn't really have anything to do with the Fair Housing Act, right? Because the Fair Housing Act, and I think that's where the confusion came from, is to prevent discrimination and things like that. But this is really what's going on at a local level that prevents people from coming in here and being...
But yeah, it is tied into the Fair Housing Act. It's if you're going to use federal dollars, it's basically saying, are you abiding by that?
And which is absolutely no discrimination based on
right.
your race.
Right. We have and we don't fit the HUD mold. I think that was the mayor's point. There isn't a redlined area where you won't be able to get a loan in that area. We don't have those kind of pockets in Palm Coast. We're one blended community together kind of thing. So HUD doesn't really. Their whole criteria isn't looking at Palm Coast. It's looking at other areas where that might be happening.
Gotcha.
But they still want you to take a look and make sure that we don't have discrimination somewhere in Palm Coast. And, there's no signs of that whatsoever. You all know that because we're very diverse in each neighborhood versus having pockets of neighborhoods.
Any council comments or questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll open up to public comment. Any member of the public wish to make comment on agenda item number 8, please do so at this time. And I'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. Entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Moved. Seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
Jose.
Enjoy your move.
Now move to the consent agenda item. Any member of the public wish to make comment on agenda item number 9 or 10, please do so at this time.
I have a question on number 9.
Okay, so you wish to pull number 9?
Yes.
Okay. Ask a question. Yes. I have to really guess.
So we'll pull agenda item number 9. Ms. Shipley?
The last time we met at the workshop, they did not have the... Is this new that I thought we couldn't find a contractor for the pool? Was this the contractor?
We went out to bid, went to formal bid and got no bid. So we went and then contacted commercial pool contractors throughout our network, and we got 4 quotes. So it's still the same basic process, but going out and soliciting those quotes. The All Season Pools, which is a national recognized company, came in with a low price of $136,000. Our budget was $175,000. So
lower than the 3 other ones, which are very, very... So $173,000, $177,000, $175,000, and then $136,000?
That's the age-old question. Once you
the
get that figured out
outlier.
For us... the fact that we had no one bid on it tells me they're busy. Okay, and that when you're busy, you usually give higher prices. But we're our staff that looked through all this is very comfortable with this firm. This isn't just a local residential pool company. It is a commercial pool company, and it meets the criteria we had for sand filters and pumps and all that. So we have no reason to believe there's a problem with the low bid.
That's it. Good. Okay. Any other questions? Any member from the public wish to make comment on agenda item number 9? Seeing none, I'll close a public comment. I'll take it back to the council. We will move to approve the consent agenda. Agenda item number 9 and agenda item number 10.
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Move to a public participation portion of our agenda.
Madam Mayor, I believe we still need to approve agenda item number 10, the consent agenda.
She did the consent agenda.
Did we have a vote on it?
Yeah, okay. On the consent. We didn't separate them afterwards. We didn't do them separately.
Put them all together.
Back to bed.
New sheriff in town.
Yeah.
Public participation portion of our event. Any member from the public has 3 minutes to come up and speak on agenda items that are items of discussion not on the agenda today. Your 3 minutes will begin after you announce your name for the public. Thank you so much.
Good morning, George Mayo, Palm Coast. Merry Christmas to all. Just something that I noticed that went on today when we had the second reading of item number 3, the 28 acres in Matanzas. As we were discussing it, this camera here, as it shows now, shows either the public speaker or it had an overview of the council. And while you were all pleasant to look at, when they had the map up with the shaded area that you spoke of, somebody sitting on this side, you either got to try and look at it there and you do far away, or that's a bad angle. I'm just asking after, rather than just looking at you, they might be able to put the map up on all the screens, make it easier for the public to see, not only just me, but when we're full, so that everybody can see what you're speaking of. I should have gotten up. I just had a question concerning the Fair Housing Act and everything. The county is working on more bus transportation, seeing if there's looking at maybe regular bus service. But a friend of mine works and drives for the county buses that drive people around. I know they have requirements, whether it's income qualifications, et cetera. But I don't think enough people realize that they can call this and use it, because primarily it's seniors or people going to and from the doctor, et cetera. But it is available to all. And maybe the city can ask the county what their requirements are. So if somebody's working at a McDonald's and is $500 above their income requirements, maybe something can be adjusted to that. They can call them and say, well, I need to get to Walmart area. Can you pick me up here and to and from? It would be very easy. They start early, they work late and whatever, but maybe just get in concert with them and see if something can be worked out if need to be. But I don't think enough people make enough use of that bus system. And that's all. Thank you. Happy New Year to all.
Happy New Year.
Next member.
Taking Jack's place.
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. I wish everybody Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and everything. My house was just completed, the roof, so I'm ecstatic. I just want to know the work that they're doing on Belterre in the center. Is it on schedule? When do you think it'll be completed and everything? Because it can get, cars see all these cones and they start moving over and they don't bother to look or use their signal. So things could happen. But again, everybody, a healthy year coming up.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Good morning. My name is Trish Giacconi. I'm the CEO of the Family Life Center. And I am here this morning because I had sent a letter to the city several weeks ago requesting the opportunity for one of you as a city council member to sit on our board of directors at the Family Life Center. I had not heard back, and I recognize that there's been some transition. So I wanted to come here in person and cordially invite one of you to participate as an ex officio member so that you can see what the Family Life Center is currently doing. We are going to be celebrating our 30th year here in Flagler County. We are looking to grow and expand, and we feel it would be important to have the City of Palm Coast represented and at the table to have these discussions. I find that it was pretty relevant to have the conversation about housing, particularly in what we do. We recognize that the victims that we serve have a very difficult time finding affordable housing in Flagler County, in the city of Palm Coast, where most of our survivors, and by most I mean over 70% of the survivors that we work with, live in the city of Palm Coast prior to coming and staying in our shelter. That's a significant portion of the population. And so again, I would welcome any one of you to come join our board of directors. I sent a letter with some brief information. I'd be more than happy to send out additional information as far as when the meetings are held, what time commitment that looks like for your full consideration. And I can send that either to Mr. Landon or to each of you via your email. But I hope that you would consider that and get back with us within the next month or so we can get started on the next phase. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
May I just... Not yet. Okay. I'll get back.
Okay. I'll be here.
Another member, any member from the public wish to make a comment? We will close public comment. We will make sure that the TVs are correct. The presentations, if they're going to be up on the screens moving forward?
You've got a couple of them. I think they do something different on each one of them. But we'll...
Well, in lieu of us having I don't think our pictures probably need to be up there.
I requested that.
I know, I'm just saying.
Lights
I don't know
on
if
everything.
That's...
Under the circumstances, I can see why.
When it's that, but they usually have with whoever speaking, whether it's you or her audience or whatever, so that because it is being televised too. So, but yes, they heard the
you
message.
We will look at it. Yes.
Thank you. With our transportation system, with the county's transportation system. Obviously anything we can do to promote the on-call service of our transportation system in the county, would be beneficial for our residents. Is it on our website anywhere with any details?
I don't know if it's on our website. We've had these conversations before, but...
I think one of the downsides, I have a couple of neighbors, elderly neighbors, who tried to use the transportation. There's a two-hour window that you have to work within, and that makes it difficult to make plans. You know, if they say, well, we'll be there between 8 and 10, and you're like, well, if my appointment's at 10 and you come and get me at 8, I'm there for 2 hours. You know, so it's a little difficult right now. And I think in part of it is the use. I hope, you know, if people start using it more, maybe that they'll get more vehicles and the window will shrink. But it's, you know, the chicken or the egg.
It's the best we can do, though. I mean, I can tell you, serving on the county, it's very expensive to run a transportation system. In particular, in Palm Coast, we talked about this at the workshop, to have a fixed route is fiscally impossible. It just is. We cannot drive up and down every single street in Palm Coast. It's just not cost-effective. So we have some challenges, but I do know the county's working on phase two. To advance the system even further, and I think to address some of the measures of having more of a
routine,
more consistent way to pick up passengers. But anything we can do to promote that, I agree, I think we should be doing. It's a service that the county does provide for residents. It's non-call service. It's easy to attach as more of an educational component to our website. So,
and I think we talked about the Uber and how we need to educate the seniors more on how to use Uber and how to get around the Uber. But I think unless we also go and educate the seniors and the juniors that are getting their licenses and want to make a little extra money and can't find that part-time job, there's not enough Uber drivers in Palm Coast right now. You can call for an Uber, and they're just not available. So trying to get both sides educated so we could use that service.
Yeah, there's, to Council Member Shipley's point, there's obviously a room for on-call private ride systems like Uber and Lyft to expand, but a lot of what I have been reading for denser areas is that there's a tendency on the part of local governments to say, well, Uber and Lyft are just going to take care of all of our public transportation needs. On the way in here this morning, I heard a report that although they don't publish public, you know, financial reports, that Uber has managed to lose something like $800 million in the last quarter, you know, basically by subsidizing the service that it's trying to build up in urban areas. So, you know, I mean, are they going to continue to be a, you know, low-cost, efficient, on-demand, particularly, you know, it's something we need to look into. And,
well, I think
we can probably
take this up under our strategic...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's...
Let me just throw this in there. I do have a plan in I think I met with them, or I set a date for them in February. Altamont Springs has a combination of city-run transport, county-run transportation, and Uber. So in our case, like you were saying, we can't run up and down all the streets, but we can have Uber move people to certain areas that buses then can come and move them through the main thoroughfares. And so there's things to do. We'll get there.
Address that moving forward. Beltair, when?
Beltair is a project that is being completed by our own crews. Is it on time? No, there's a couple other priorities, one on Matthew. All that 2 months of cleanup was the same crew that would be doing this. Also, we've diverted our city crews to Holland Park and made great progress there. Now that they've started, I think anybody that watches city crews do projects, they get after it, and they've already started really getting after here, so it will get done as quickly as possible. They've kind of got the final grading, and they've already started on the irrigation, and we'll just keep moving forward with getting it done as quickly as possible with our own crews.
And Trish, Board of Directors, I had not received any letters of requests. But I would suggest we can put that on a future agenda item, and if a council member would like to step up, we'll approve that at that time.
Okay.
I can tell you right now that I'd be honored to be on the board of directors, our board, just on the board for that. So if they're looking for somebody, I could just tell you now. I would like to do that.
That's fine. I just want to make sure we're doing it officially.
Something like this you can do now by just a motion and a vote, or I can put it on the agenda. It's your pleasure.
I'm fine with that.
Heidi would like to do it. I think it would be great, and I would make a motion.
I move approval of assigning Heidi Shipley to the board of Family Life Centers.
And do I have a second?
I second that.
Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Great. So we'll move to City Council of Matters Not on the Agenda. Councilmember Cuff.
Well, I was going to wish everyone a Merry Christmas, a Happy Holiday, and a Healthy New Year, but sitting next to Vice Mayor, no deal. Seems to be kind of redundant, so, but nevertheless, that's my only comment for today.
I just want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, and a joyous Kwanzaa, and most importantly, be safe. See you here in January.
Be safe, be happy, be merry. Have a good new year.
Seeing they turned down my idea of singing Christmas carols to all of you, I will just say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and we'll see you all in January.
And I'd like to wish everyone else happy holidays in our community, to our staff. Thank you for your continued hard work throughout the year. We look forward to an exciting time beginning January, a lot of exciting things going on in our community. So safe and health to all. We'll now move to Mr. Reichman for comments.
Well, I think as a city attorney, I'm supposed to say bah humbug or something to that effect, but I won't. So I'll defer to Mr. Landon.
Well, there's, you know, I know it's holiday season, but there's still some more business to do the rest of this week. Our legislative delegation is coming into town tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock at the county building. This is relatively, you know, for this city council, new to get involved in the legislative process. Our mayor has been doing this for a long time. We've had some discussions about the initial priorities, and it's important to keep it short. And so the three that I sent out to you yesterday that the mayor would like to talk about for the city is water and sewer funding, wastewater funding. This is an annual. They have a grant cycle. And the idea behind this one is it's a very expensive venture for water and sewer is. And a lot of the expenses because of state and federal regulations. So the idea is help us with some of those requirements. The next one is really not a city program, but it does have an impact on the city. And that is the Adult with Disabilities Annual Funding Solution. Right now, it's my understanding, I'm not an expert in this, but it's my understanding that there's only 4 counties that don't get funding for this program on an annual basis. There's actually, you have to, Flagler County, and it's actually Flagler County School District, has to apply for special funding every year. And what that does is 2 things. One of them is a couple of years ago, it wasn't approved. So then all of a sudden you had 1 year where the program was underfunded. And then when it's a special funding request, Flagler County, overall county, only gets so many dollars from the state. And this kind of goes into that pot. So things like water and sewer projects are reduced because of the special funding. So the goal here is to try to work with our state delegation, school district, county, see how we can get into the annual funding allocation like most other counties so it doesn't have this special tag to it. And then the last one is something you requested through last workshop, and that is just encourage them to get their job done when it comes to medical marijuana so that we can start doing our job and setting the framework down. So that's, you know, kind of a summary of And once again, this is flexible. During the year, other things may come up.
And, you know, honestly, I mean, I've been through several of these legislative delegation meetings, and yes, we'd like our legislative delegation to come in and hear from our local communities, but they're hearing from everyone. And so I think it's really important to note that to really have our message be very effective is to ask for a very strategic need in our community, one that they have supported historically and one that's not going to be such a big ask that it's not realistic. So, and as far as the adults with disabilities, it is a great program, and I think it's important to note we don't want to lose the program, but it is putting us in a very competitive aspect annually where we don't need to be if there's an entity that we could set up or the county or the school district can set up where there's funds naturally flow into. And then obviously the final one being critical to this council as far as we really do want this medical marijuana issue to be resolved in Tallahassee. This legislative session for us to have a clear indication moving forward. And with that, I hope I will, you know, advocate for this board appropriately, but if there's anything else, just let me know.
Mayor, the only other thing I had is schedule. Just keep trying to remind people the holiday schedule we have. City offices are closed Friday the 23rd and Monday the 26th for Christmas. And we'll also be closed December 30th, which is a Friday, and January 2nd, Friday, which is a Monday. So the next two Fridays and Mondays, part of the holidays, city offices will be closed. Trash pickup? Recycle, yard debris, all of it is on regular schedule. There would be no changes for Waste Pro when they're out in the streets. And then also as a reminder, your next workshop, which is supposed to be next week between Christmas and New Year's, obviously is not happening. And the first meeting in January we always cancel, and that's being canceled too. So that's January 3rd business meeting. Both of those are being canceled for the holidays. So your next workshop will be January 10th, and next business meeting will be January 17th. And with that, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Move adjourned.